Do you guys know that on, I guess it would have been Tuesday, 2 days ago, Mayor Lucas was, I think, three doors down? Yeah, new morning show here in the building, Shea Moore Morning Show. And he didn't even stop by to say hi, so now he joins us. Good morning, Mr. Mayor. Appreciate you being here.
Good morning. My apologies. I wanted to stop in and actually do a mashup of both shows, Hip Hop in the Morning and Mundo in the Morning, but didn't quite have the time.
Yeah, I hear you're going to be doing more stuff over there, and that's great. I think the conversations might trend in different directions, but I think that's the that's the beauty of the opportunity that comes in this building. So we appreciate you being here.
Delighted to be with you. Exactly.
Well, we've got a lot to dive into here. Let's start with this. A lawsuit that you have filed to claw back potentially the minimum threshold of police funding for Kansas City, Missouri's police department. Take me through the decision behind this lawsuit and why you believe it's important to file that lawsuit.
Well, a few things. First of all, I'm always intrigued by decisions by the press. This was a lawsuit that was filed, I believe, in January, actually. And, you know, they're just kind of getting around to reporting it now, which is fine, and their prerogative. There was a separate lawsuit that was filed over a year ago that I think a reporter from the Star told me yesterday, hey, we'll be writing about this soon, too. You know, I guess kind of catch-up time for them. But all that being said, it is a lawsuit that relates to the fact that the fiscal note summary, sounding very technical, but frankly, the ballot language misrepresented what the city of Kansas City had told the Missouri State Auditor and the Secretary of State, which was that this would have a fiscal impact on Kansas City. Our friends in Jefferson City absolutely ignored it. And I think that led to what was disputed and errant ballot language to the voters of Missouri, which didn't allow them to have a proper evaluation of the question. Full stop. I think most people, myself included, if somebody put something on my ballot tomorrow and said, do you want to give more money to the police? I'd say, sure. Yeah. If somebody said, you want to give more money to the police and let's say defund the fire department, I'd say, not so fast. Right. And I think that's really what Kansas City wanted to be able to put into the balance of things. And unfortunately, we weren't able to. So that's a lawsuit that's in front of the Missouri Supreme Court. It's been there now for 6 months. But and there will be a hearing coming up in June in connection with it. But that's the whole balance of it right now.
Okay.
It's all about really fairness and honesty, I think, in terms of what ballot language is. A lot more boring than it might seem.
Mm-hmm. Now, we had on Tony Lukdemeyer yesterday, asked him about this. And his point of contention here was that the ballot language was really just giving the state, not specific to Kansas City, but the state, the opportunity to increase minimum funding for any police department in the state of Missouri. Of course, we know it was geared towards Kansas City. No one's dumb enough to think otherwise. But he's saying that his suggestion was that you're conflating two issues when it comes to funding for KCPD versus what the actual ballot language was. So how would you respond to that?
Well, you know, I think it's, and this is where we'll become really technical lawyers, it related to the Hancock Amendment itself, right? It's repealing something that was crafted by Republicans to protect taxpayers in the future. And so I think local governments, frankly, even if you take the police out of it, which I'd be delighted to do, because I think a lot of our police funding issues actually have nothing to do with KCPD, have a lot more to do with state control of cities, how much we trust our own voters, among other things. And so the ballot question then, to Senator Lukemeyer's point, at its core is just, can the state actually force the city to pay more money without the people of the city actually voting on it? Right. And the city of Kansas City said, well, that will have an impact because we'll be forced to pay more money for things without the people of Kansas City, right, having the chance to vote, particularly on that issue.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's where we run into some concern, because for us, the real question is, can we be compelled to pay money without voters actually approving that? And it's a law that was really about unfunded mandates. I think, to the Missouri legislature's credit in the 1980s, they said, we don't like unfunded mandates. We want to require the state to come up with ways to fund them. That ballot initiative allowed basically that to be undone. I think it's hard to say that there is not a fiscal impact on a city when we are in a city that has a running, in some ways, unfunded mandate.
Mm-hmm. Our Mayor Lucas is on KCMO. Now, on the public safety issue yesterday, the Violent Crime Reduction Initiative was rolled out. Yourself, Stacey Graves, the police chief, Gene Peters-Baker was there. For those who are skeptics, for those who are like, what makes this different from the several things that have been tried in recent years to try to bring down violent crime in Kansas City. What makes this different?
You know, let me just say one final thing on the last question. I did listen enough yesterday. You guys cut the quotes just right, so I can always catch them. Senator Lukemeyer mentioned that I file a lot of suits that I lose. I think he has me confused with Attorney General Schmidt and Attorney General Bailey, right? I actually have never lost a suit that I or the city of Kansas City have actually filed. And so, you know, we've largely been successful in almost everything. We've lost in one matter, which we chose not to appeal, where I was a defendant in a case. But particularly given that most of the cases I'm actually a defendant as a member of the Board of Police Commissioners, it isn't quite accurate to say that we have unsuccessful legal strategy at the city, particularly compared to most of our Missouri statewide office holders. On the question
duly
as it
noted,
relates
duly
to...
noted.
just want to make sure the record is there and the people of this great region know. On the issue of crime prevention in Kansas City, you know, a few things. One of the points that we made yesterday was that we're committed to crime fighting strategies here in Kansas City, which include, importantly, enforcement. That includes having more police officers. We just graduated a recruit class. Numbers are very good there. A shout out to Deputy Chief Doug Niemeyer, who I know is doing strong work and making sure that we're ready for that, and call dispatchers. I think another step that we're trying to actually make sure we're doing right now is to say that, you know, look, no matter what happens, we're not just giving up and saying, well, you know, crime's going to be crime. What we're not accepting is a status quo. You're seeing greater cooperation between the prosecutor's offices, Clay, Platt, and Jackson counties, and the police department more than perhaps you've ever seen before. We're making sure that the city of Kansas City is doing the follow-up work that's necessary and prevention work in certain areas. And so I think that while, you know, frankly, there are still things happening, we see in the morning news today what ends up being what seems like a shootout at a Family Dollar at 31st and Troost. While things like that may happen, we're doing all that we can to make sure that we're finding assailants quickly, that we're preventing retaliation, and that we're providing services to neighborhoods that have been impacted by violent crime.
You know, the last time the city seemed to have one of these highly successful violent crime initiatives was, of course, the NOVA initiative almost 10 years ago now. But we are down about, what, 200, 250 cops from just that point 10 years ago. So how do we have that kind of success with proactive policing being part of the solution down a couple hundred cops? What is the answer there, if any at all?
You know, there are a few different things that we have to do, and I've had these conversations with mayors and police chiefs around the country. I think that for major municipal police departments, with very few notable exceptions, it has been very hard to recruit. I know you've talked a lot about Mayor Francis Suarez in Miami. Miami is a place that's been able to recruit well. I don't think it's necessarily the magic of Florida or anything like that. It's that Miami is a very desirable place to live and be. I think most other major cities, ranging from large ones, super large ones like Los Angeles or New York, to medium-sized ones like Memphis or Kansas City, are running into very real challenges with it. And so a few things that are necessary for us. One is making sure, and this is where I give the credit to the current police chief, you have to have collaborations for it. A lot of the, particularly the, what I would call soft touches, and soft touch doesn't mean it's unimportant, it means that it's a different touch, needs to be done by nonprofit groups, by others. We don't necessarily have the time for walking the beat and some of the engagement that perhaps 10 years ago we were able to have when you talked about the NOVA program. It's collaboration with federal agencies. I myself met with the director of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, the ATF, about a week and a half ago, talking about where can we use their help, particularly on things like, you know, follow-up data investigation. We talk about labs all the time, and a lot of our crimes, we're trying to get information from cell phones. That is incredibly time-intensive. That's incredibly human capital-intensive, right? Finding that sort of support, using ATF, Missouri Highway Patrol, and others in areas we can, which shows the foolishness of things like the Second Amendment Preservation Act, for example, when we could say, ATF, can you look at 100 firearms that have been used for us so that we can have people that can get to go back out on the streets or investigate other things? I mean, that's what you need to do. And ultimately, yeah, hiring is going to be a thing. But, you know, one of the challenges I have, and I went back and listened to your interview yesterday with my very good friend, Senator Lukemeyer, and I send him my regards, and others, we have got to move beyond the rhetoric of, I think, just non-solutions. Frankly, you know, all right, fine. We can all live in 2020 forever and have debates about defund or fund more or who was bad and all that sort of stuff. I see them in the Twitter comments, but, you know, we're at a point now where we've got a very real crisis. And I think the police chief, myself, the prosecutor, frankly, a lot of cops I talk to, and a lot of people right and left, including the governor of Missouri and other folks that I've visited with, want to see all these communities become safer. And right now, knowing that we don't have 160 recruits that are lined up like we do in the fire department, which is just interesting, actually, just the difference, we need to find ways that we can solve these problems immediately. So those are some of the ideas I'd have.
And last thing on that note, I mean, you know, when it does come to the issue of the rhetoric, you know, it's interesting. I just saw this quote from Gwen Grant to the Urban League yesterday in The Star, and she writes here, escalating traffic stops, residence checks could be problematic. KCPD has a negative reputation for racial profiling. I mean, is that helpful? Because it seems like that's also part of the problem here, where we say, and they say, the community doesn't trust the police. Well, there's a narrative out there that the police are somehow the bad guys in all this.
You know, I think, look, people are going to say what they're going to say, right? Her organization accused me of being complicit in racism. Other people racist who I don't think are necessarily. So these are things that happen. But, you know, what it doesn't mean is that I stop being mayor, right? Or I give up. I mean, it is a tough and it's a tense time in a number of areas of government, and policing certainly probably is the tip of the spear in connection with that. I won't pretend it. But something I said in yesterday's press conference that absolutely nobody in the world picked up, because nobody listens to those kind of points, was that, you know, I did a ride along and I specifically asked the department, don't put me with, you know, like an all-star, don't put me with somebody necessarily of great tenure. I did a ride along with two officers that I think broke in less than 2 years ago. And we were in Central Patrol Division. It was incredibly interesting, but these are 20-somethings. What I would encourage anyone in Kansas City to do is, no, you don't have to do Citizens Police Academy. You don't have to do all those things, although they're wonderful. Talk to younger officers, right? I would think that, you know, one of the officers, you know, was black, the other was white, but both, like, were young guys. I'd almost say kids in a way, who were in it because they care. And what I would encourage her to do, and what I would encourage maybe the counter rhetoric to be, is less what all the rest of us have been fighting about forever, or kind of even the grizzled years of rhetorical battle that even I've been engaged in and others. And instead, talk to some of these newer folks that are just doing it because they care. And I would think that would change the perspective. It's not quite answering your question. You say, well, if somebody says this profession stinks, how could you ever do it? You'll be a terrible person. Why would you do it? And I like to still think that there's reason for public service. There's still greatness in it. And that officers like this one, who signed up during a time of protest, frankly, I think after the protest had happened, are still in it because they actually want to see this country and this city become a better place. That national rhetoric will continue to exist. I think the best way to counteract it is to be an example of something different. Mm-hmm. Just like how there's a view that, you know, politicians are lying, terrible fools. Some of you listening right now may think I'm one of them. Nonetheless, right, if I exhibit something different, then maybe you won't think I'm like that whole list of others. And I think our officers right now are trying their best to do that.
He is the mayor of Kansas City, Quentin Lucas. Mr. Mayor, we always appreciate your being here, sir. We hope you have a great day, and thanks for joining us.
Have a great weekend, everybody.
All right, that is Quentin Lucas on KCMO.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL Fan Festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen. Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.